Tabletopped will start after the following messages.
How do you fix a quandary? There's only one solution. Portal Quandary is a Dungeons & Dragons real play comedy, dramedy podcast about a party of mismatched heroes trying to do just that. Join Dungeon Master Tyrone Cross as he hurls our Melbourne-based party into a mystical world full of strange creatures, stranger people, and strangest of all, unanticipated self-discovery. Gross. Listen to Portal Quandary now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Episodes released tri-weekly.
Welcome back to another episode of Tabletopped. Today, we are talking about pacing, rhythm, tempo. It's not just for jazz anymore. That was my best go at an intro line.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't get a hand on
so
the ball.
So that intro wasn't improv'd then?
It wasn't, no. Okay. That was me like trying
we
to...
We rehearsed it and it was better off mic.
Yeah, I was trying
did
to...
You really?
I was channeling Franco's intro lines. But yeah, today we are talking about how to use and control the pace in your TTRPG game.
You should have done like a Whiplash reference. I've never watched
it. On my tempo.
But,
okay.
Yeah, on my tempo, yeah. Yeah. On my tempo, snap, snap, snap.
Yeah, we
and
do
then
a
I'll throw a chair at someone. Okay, yeah, so like, let's talk a little bit about tempo today. I know that we've kind of alluded to this topic quite a bit during
past
episodes.
Yes, the god
episodes.
Of storms.
Yes, the Tempest. But
Tempest
yeah,
budget.
Where do we want to start? We can talk about combat tempo. We could talk about like role play scene tempo. Like, basically, for me, it is one of the most important parts of running a game is trying to keep it feel like there's a momentum to the game. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of unsuccessful sessions or games happen when you like get stuck somewhere and the tempo falters and like
slows down. What does
really
it mean to
down.
Have an unsuccessful session?
Just one that like myself as a GM didn't feel good about. Like, oh, I wish that had happened
oh,
better.
Man, that's just basic being a GM.
Do you think, what is it about other people's enjoyment or perceived enjoyment that affects how you enjoy the game?
Oh, no.
It's called
oh,
into
no,
this
no,
episode.
No, no, no. Oh, shit.
I am interested in pulling this thread. It's not on topic.
Right now, internally, it's like that scene in What We Do in the Shadows where Nandor tries to fly up to space, and then he starts plummeting back down from the atmosphere on fire, and he's just going, oh, shit. No, I just like I feel like when I have the most fun in a in a game, either GMing or playing, it feels like a roller coaster ride, and that it's like this is like we cannot stop until we get to the conclusion of the session because like we're going and like things are happening and we're reacting to them and we're trying to do stuff, but it feels like we are in a story, right? And it feels less like. I don't know, like choosing stuff in a menu of like a game. You know what I mean? I guess for me, it does feel like I sort of slowly start forgetting that it is just a game, and it feels
like a fictional
more like
setting.
A fiction. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And so that's why it's so important to me. But maybe
do you
I'm
think
the only
that
one who really likes this
to,
as a thing.
To toss in there.
Do you dissociate a lot, or?
I'm just gonna, sorry. It's gonna be another Nick and Franco talk at each other episode.
Gilmore guys.
I was gonna say to answer Franco's like initial question, like I build the game for other people to have fun with it, and I really want them to interact with it and take it with them and talk about it. So if I walk away from a session, go, they weren't into that. Yeah. I didn't build that right. They didn't enjoy it as much as I think they could have. Then that's where I'm like, I need to step my game up.
I think we need a therapy session.
Well, what about you? What, do you never think about like the pacing of a game as being important?
Do you think about other people in general?
Yeah, I do think about other people. I do come away with sessions sometimes, you know, thinking like, oh, or is this person having fun? Or whatever. But that's usually something that's like more obvious.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe the tempo discussion is something maybe less about player enjoyment and just how it feels to be in a story when you're also writing it all together. Because I also write fiction.
Right.
And I think pacing is really important.
Yeah.
I have a lot of fun with pacing. Mm-hmm. But I find that in games, I don't think about it as much. But I do get what you mean when you say pacing.
Right.
Or a tempo. I think, you know, there's a lot of like tempo killers, initiative, obviously. Any dice roll really can be a killer.
Yeah.
Anything that reminds you that it's a game, if you want to talk about tempo as being something like how immersed are you in the environment?
Yeah.
Then,
I guess
yeah.
that is an interesting way
like
to look at
interacting
it
with the game
immersion.
Mechanics.
Yeah. Because, like, I don't know. I also feel, though, that like dice rolls can be like a really successful part of tempo, because if you build up to that peak of the roller coaster and it's like, all right, like roll right now, and like the
yeah, but you got
this is a moment, you know what I mean?
And that's why every dice roll is important, because you got to make sure that whatever the outcome, it's
meaningful.
It's meaningful.
And to piggyback on your allegory right there, our analogy, English is hard. I think a good pacing is that you always want the rolls to be at the peak of that roller coaster.
Right.
Yeah.
When it's like naturally waiting to crash down. Or if you're like sliding down, you'll be like, oh, well, stop. Let's do a roll right now. Mm. Like,
well, then why don't we talk a little bit about combat first as like a way to kind of slide into this. And then we can talk about like role playing. And then maybe after a break, we can talk about some other parts of it. But like,
so how about our feelings?
In combat, I find it's hardest to control tempo, especially in a really mechanic heavy game, because just the fact that people have to go through the mechanics to interact with the game in combat means that, you know, a round of combat can take 20 minutes, you know what I mean? And that's
A round of combat takes 40 minutes. I timed it.
Yeah, a round of combat?
A round of combat.
A round of combat?
A round of combat.
A single round? Like everyone going once?
Everyone going once. I've clocked it at 40 minutes.
Wow.
We have like 8 people in our
That's true.
Game.
And we have to not to call anyone out, you know who you are. We do have to like re-explain it 2 or 3 times exactly what's happening.
Come on.
At least twice in one round of
Rio, you don't need to talk down to yourself like that.
Wow, got him.
Oh, he did.
Hey, by the way, speaking of timing, because you do want everything to kind of like be in its place and sequential and an appropriate time. My name's Shade. I'm joined by Franco and Rio.
We didn't introduce. Fucking fool.
Oh my god.
What a clown.
I was waiting to make a timing joke. I didn't want to. I was like, no, we're going to do it now.
Wow.
Nick, is it your first day?
Man, I totally flubbed that. I beefed it.
Absolutely. Okay, so we have to start this episode over.
No. This stays. This is all about tempo.
This is it.
So, with combat, yes, it can be a slog. And you do want to keep it quick and snappy, and you do sometimes have to explain rules and things like that. For me, I think, trying to... So we had a game this past Thursday, as we always do. I didn't think that one went too slow for the combats, personally,
Yeah, I didn't think so either. I mean, we also didn't have a lot of combat. We had the first section, but it also like led in. It was sort of the slow build up on the roller coaster.
Correct.
It felt like.
Mm-hmm. So I think that like just trying. So there was a moment as a GM or a DM or whatever. One of the things that can trip you up for combat is realizing, oh, I forgot to do this thing with the creature.
Yeah.
And why I wanted to bring up this past Thursday is I realized I should have used a legendary resistance this creature. And I acknowledged it real quick. I was like, hey, oh, man, I should do this. But I already said that he didn't save, so he didn't save. Tempo. Maintain.
Yeah.
And also, I also feel like there's a trap a lot of GMs, and I've fell into this before too, where a monster just gets absolutely tabled in like a round of combat or something.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, okay, I'm going to like double that HP or something like that. So,
yeah,
and then
I've done that before, unfortunately.
Yeah, because you're like, I want this to feel like a real encounter, like a beefy fight, and then it's just like, oh no, now it's
just
long.
I need a contradiction real quick.
I need to confess something as well.
Okay, we have a confession after a contradiction.
Yeah.
All right.
Go for it.
So you were saying like, and I love and respect.
Oh, okay.
You were talking about you were doing the thing, you should have done something, and then you acknowledged it that, oh, he had a legendary resistance, and then you acknowledged that he should have used a legendary resistance, but you didn't go back and do it. I argue that acknowledging if you forgot to do something does break the tempo.
I agree with that.
Yeah, no, that's valid. That's valid.
So if you do make a mistake,
like
in real life, don't verbalize it. Never admit to anything. That's keep that rolling.
Yeah. Well, so, and part of why, but see, I think that part of why I would counter that is you know, did it? Yes, it broke the immersion for a split second, but it would have slowed us down if it was like, oh, we just are going to unwrite what we
yeah,
did.
Yeah, that would have
slowed
us down.
You don't acknowledge
more.
It at all. Right. You just keep going.
But sometimes when you're kind of like going, okay, what am I going to do out loud? And you just verbalize something because you're just thinking aloud. Yeah. You're having fun with friends, which is more or less what happened. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like...
Everyone, stop. I forgot this thing.
It was like, oh, shoot, I forgot to do that thing. Oh, well. And I just vocalized it.
There's also, I think, something about vocalizing it, too, that can be helpful is that if you have a lot of fucking rules lawyers in your group and you do it the next time and they're all like, well, then why the fuck did this work the first time? You know what I mean?
This is exactly what I was going to say.
I would always do that after a session, though. Mm.
Right. Well, but this could help tempo. So, like, if you hadn't, because I knew this thing could potentially get back up after you do all this, I wanted to put it into minds as well of like, hey, this is something I didn't do. Help me remember later, you know, kind of thing.
That is interesting because, if you do mention that you've made, like you forgot to do something, that breaks the tempo because now you're like, oh, I made a acknowledging it moving forward, which doesn't mean, but then if you do it, a rules lawyer could argue on it, which now does create a larger
correct
break than if you hadn't mentioned it in the first place, which all of this, I think, is a really good reason why end of session should have a rose, thorns, and buds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, if you see a mistake like that, save it for the end. I don't think anyone should be arguing rules during a session.
Mm. Yeah.
You have a confession, Franco, and I really want to hear it.
I've done that before, too, in, like, where somebody will be like, I don't think that's how that works, and I'll just say... I think I've said this 1,000 times before. It's like, let's just go with this for now, and then we'll look it up later so we can just keep going.
Yeah.
My confession is that there was a star spawn, main bad guy that you guys, the larva mage that you guys fought on the island. If you remember that, Steven actually killed it in one attack.
Yeah.
In one round. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He killed it immediately.
Oh, Nock nice. Was a monster.
Yeah, he was a lot. He was unstoppable.
He was a bugbear.
Yeah. He's a bugbear, yeah. He's impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but like, I've also, it's really hard to get that right. But it's also like too fast of a tempo is also not great. You know
Izanami.
What I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, do you guys have any ways that as a GM you've ever modified combat itself to try to, like, correct a speed of play or, like, how something is feeling in the moment to try to correct the tempo to make it feel a little bit better?
I think I've made a mistake doing that, just adding more HP, is usually a mistake. But then sometimes with something like with what happened with your monster Izanami, we... basically immobilized her in the first round.
Yeah, and then just beat the shit out of the creature.
There's a lot of rule
Rio
interplay.
Rio was so upset.
I was looking forward to that encounter so much. It was the one time I got attached.
I loved it.
Yeah, everyone enjoyed it.
I felt like Big Damn Heroes, yeah.
Yeah, to the thing about what you were saying about, like, you want people to interact with your fiction and talk about it, we fucking interacted with that fiction.
I'm going to interact with that fiction. Fuck you.
Yeah, we stole her weapon and beat the shit out of her before she could, like, kill all of us with her demon fire or whatever.
Right, yeah. That's when I vowed no more solar encounters with a party of 7.
Yeah, because I also remember, like, before the session, you being like, okay, everyone, I just want to let you know, like, this is going to be a dangerous night, okay?
Yeah,
like, this is going to be tough. And then we just destroyed it.
Yeah, and one go. One surprise round
so
later.
Good. Hey, that wasn't 40 minutes.
Yeah.
That one wasn't.
No. And everyone, like, it was just like a kernel of an idea happened where I was like, am I able to steal this weapon? And then I think it was Steven because he was a monk.
I cast command and she dropped it.
Yeah, and then Steven being a monk, like, ran in, grabbed it, and then disengaged. And then you were like, shit.
Yeah. The weapon was the dangerous part
of
that.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of it, so.
It was very fun.
But other than that, what I will sometimes do as, like, a cheat is I'll use the 20-10 or the 15-5 rule for initiative. Mm-hmm. And I don't actually roll for the monsters. Mm-hmm. I just like...
I do that for the monsters, too.
Yeah.
Not anymore, but I used to do that when we played online. And, you know, there's, like, the encounter builder thing or whatever on D&D Beyond. Yeah, I also
just
do
have
that.
This preset up. Mm-hmm. And then also
20, 15, 10, 5.
if anyone gets like someone's damage down to like less than 10 at the stage that we usually play, like mid level, I'm like, you've killed it. Good job.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I'm not gonna make it go back another round and use another turn to take out the last like
variable hit dice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would echo that. I mean, again, with this most recent fight that we did, I didn't bother rolling initiative for them. I just said, okay, two people went first, then the next, then that's a monster, then two people, then a monster, then one person, then a monster, or something like that.
And I really want to break into passive initiative, like for players.
There's a thing I've seen where you roll initiative after an encounter. Basically, you're rolling like...
For the next one?
Yeah. Like at the beginning of a session, you roll initiative, and then that'll be the initiative for the next time. At the end of the fight, you roll initiative again for the next fight.
I mean, you could also just make your initiative, like your plus for initiative, be your score. Like that's your passive initiative.
I mean,
that's what I was saying.
Yeah.
My only, you know, this is a whole different
so many of them
can
would be
of
tied,
worms. There are character features which are negated by that, like lore bards, for example.
I've also heard something, though, that was interesting to me about this, where it was instead of having initiative at all, what you do is that you say, okay, like there's only two rolls and it's heroes, enemies, and everything happens within the same 6 seconds, so people can decide who goes when, like whatever is most
strategically
strategic. And so then either all of the monsters go first because they are all kind of like swarming attacking, and then all the heroes respond, or the heroes get the drop on the monsters and then the monsters respond.
You could do like in Cairn, whenever you and like get into a fight, you roll a dex save, and then if you pass the save, you go before the monsters, and if you fail the save, you go after the monsters. And then the turns alternate. So it's basically like everyone who passed goes first, then the monsters go. Everyone who fails goes next, then the monsters go, I think.
I mean, you can have it.
But then, and then...
That is a much quicker way of doing it, and it keeps like the certain features if you're playing 5e in play.
And if you want to...
So in 5e, if you treat it like a save, you could probably do that. Like maybe there's like a static save for a monster. Maybe the DC is just 15 or whatever. Then like every time you roll, it's you think of it as an initiative save. Then you do that, go monsters go, failures go, and then everybody goes.
Yeah,
and then monsters go.
You could also even do it like rotating initiative, in that it would be like heroes, villains, villains, heroes. So that going second isn't always a pure disadvantage because they get to essentially go twice.
I did that before with you guys when we not that exactly, but when we played Knave. You roll initiative every time, but it's just a D6.
Right.
And then you just, it's a group initiative.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways. Like, initiative does slow things down.
Yeah, we've talked about initiative
already. Yeah, but, like, also the, so this is tougher and much more for, like, more mechanic-heavy TTRPGs, but how do you also deal with, like, the decision paralysis during combat that will slow down everything? Like, especially at a high level in, like, a Pathfinder
or... You give people a timer.
Yeah, you just set a timer
at
the table.
Scream at them.
You son of a bitch, you had a full 20 minutes to come up with your move.
40, you had 40 minutes.
40 minutes.
I just feel like it's hard because, you know, combat is flexible and things like factors change as people kill monsters or whatever. And like you have to decide what you're going to do, or if someone moves into a spell blast space or whatever, you can't really do that the same way anymore.
I'm going to just say, like, I think... For me, empathy also is like a big part of my tempo experience. So like I may be feeling impatient about like, okay, you had some time to decide this or that. But I know that I will also probably need to reconsider some things and talk out something real quick at the table.
So here's the correct way. I will usually figure out a plan A, a plan B. And then, like, a general, like, if...
As a player, you mean?
Yeah, if none of those works, I'm just going to do my default go-to. So it's like, at the start of a round, I'm like, okay, what is my character going to do? Great.
Yeah.
If I can't do that, what is my best backup option?
Gotcha.
And if both of those get written out, cantrips.
Yeah.
Or just all swing and attack at the nearest thing.
Yeah.
And that way, I kind of always have a plan. And then, obviously, pay attention while the other players are going, and you... fiddle if you need to, but you have your go-to. So when it comes to your turn, and because I will try to do this, I don't know if I've always succeeded. When it comes to my turn, I'm like, here's what I'm doing. Let's go. Here's a question that I need real quick to confirm or deny if this is possible. And then my turn goes and gets done.
For for the structure of a session, do you guys place combat specifically in a place within the session so that you can plan for that section to be a combat speed? So like what Shade was saying is like we started that session with combat. So it was like a slow ramp up to a...
Which we knew we were going to get into based on the occurrences of the last session.
Exactly, yeah. And or like I know a lot of people like to end a session with combat too. Like that is also a way
I prefer to start with combat because it is kind of a long, like tedious thing.
Yeah.
And your player's going to be at their most energy levels at the beginning. I hate when like combat gets thrown in the middle or at the end when I'm running, because I'm like I don't know if we're gonna be able to get through this whole combat.
Yes. Yeah.
If I know combat's coming, I will try to put it off and like distract the players with something else to do to move the story along, and then get into combat at the end. We'll be like, okay, the next time.
Oh, man.
And that also gives you that cliffhanger energy where it's like, okay, next time we're gonna start with a fight, and people are thinking about, oh, what's going to happen? Are we going to die?
One thing I will say, too, is like this for a mechanical-based game like Pathfinder or D&D or something, I think that that is how I would do it. Like, I usually ended a session with combat, but I think that starting it is actually a better place to put it.
Yeah.
And also, one of the reasons why I think that I like narrative games more is that you can, I think, be a little bit more flexible with placing combat throughout. Like during Candle Cove or like Lakewood or something, you can have an encounter with a monster that isn't fully resolved and have it be a little bit more narratively paced because of how that combat works, which is a lot more just like the always hit kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Like if you hit, you get hit, all that kind of stuff. And I can just like talk through it with people and it feels snappy. So.
I think I don't plan for it because I don't plan for this type of thing. It's just not something that I do.
Yeah.
But I do agree that it feels bad at the end.
Yeah.
It feels very
bad at
the end. It slows
down and everyone has like kind of a lagging
Or even just like, it's like, oh, fuck, it's like 10:30.
Yeah.
We're only halfway through this combat. Yeah. Like, ugh, that's the worst part. Yeah. That's the worst thing that can happen.
Yeah.
And you know, for me, I always want a resolution after the combat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we need at least 20, 30 minutes for that.
So a scene sequel thing.
That's correct.
Yeah. It's a fiction thing.
Yeah. I need at least 20, 30 minutes for that. So doing the combat at the end always feels bad. Would much rather start or have in the middle. Middle's, you know, obviously worse than starting with it.
I've never thought about this question.
Mm.
Yeah.
For pacing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you're going to have combat at the end or even in the middle, I really prefer for it to be very low stakes.
Yeah.
Your big boss should be, for a tempo pacing thing, your big boss should be the entire session or the first half of a session or something like that. They shouldn't be the thing that, okay, you fought your way, unless you're doing a one shot, which is different.
Which might end with combat because that's how a one shot would have to be paced.
Well, depending on how you build it. For the pacing of a, it does depend on the one shot. For the pacing of a one shot that will have combat as a central premise, I do think of that. You mentioned a roller coaster earlier.
Yeah.
That is a parabola kind of effect or a bell curve effect where you start off with, you know, setting the scenes, some explorations, some dungeon delving. Middle at the top is the fight. You probably have a small break at both ends of the fight for you know,
energy,
bio and whatnot. Yeah. And then you come off of that fight with the resolutions.
Right, yeah.
I think this is all well and good, but I just don't plan sessions like this.
I mean, that's fair.
Why don't we kind of change it then and talk a little bit more, not like combat, but more like about role play?
Yeah.
Because role play scenes and...
After this break?
No. Right now. I'm not cutting this off yet.
Get on our tempo.
No, because like the thing about role play is that we've all had that thing where a scene is dragging out and maybe it's only between two characters and the rest, like everyone else is just kind of listening. And you get to a point where you're like, oh, we've been here for a while. And like other people are maybe like there's a way that you have to keep everyone engaged as you're running. And if two people are having a conversation that could last 45 minutes or whatever, that that's actually not very fun for everyone else just to listen to for that amount of time. Yeah. So like, how do you judge tempo when it comes to role playing or more social parts of sessions?
I'll start this part of the conversation like this. Because I know it happened a lot in Argot, and it's starting to like creep into the Waterdeep game. Mm. But because our party is usually seven people, or a group of eight, someone's running. And we get into these things where it's like, we can do A mm-hmm. or we can do B. Mm. And you get like a solid 3-3 or like a couple people like not really going either way.
Or one person who goes off on themselves.
I'm getting there. And so they will discuss the merits and demerits of mm-hmm. the plan of action for a very long time.
Yeah.
And then someone makes a decision, and then someone goes, oh, wait. And then the groups change, mm-hmm. and you start the argument over again with other people taking like different sides or re-evaluating the side they were already on. And so eventually, what I do when I'm as a player is I will go, are we making a decision right now? Because we've been talking about this for a really long time. Let's just vote on it. And then usually mm-hmm. it keeps getting into discussion because we're like, well, I think we should vote this way. And we're like, no, you're just making – you're talking about the decision from a decision point of view, and then I will usually just do something. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take an action, and maybe that will get us out of this conversation. That's how I struggle with that extended role
as a
play.
Player, you mean, yeah.
As
yeah.
a player.
Yeah.
As a DM, I'm more empowered to be like, decide.
Yeah.
Because, like, we can't do this scene anymore.
Mm.
But then how do you do that in a way that's still fun and engaging without being, what's a rules lawyer for a DM? Like, what's...
rules lawyer.
Rules yeah. lawyer.
There's yeah. judge, really.
Yeah.
Rules judge dread.
You
judge
wanna...
jury executioner.
You don't want to be Simon Cowell as your judge.
Right.
I think,
You want to be Paula Abdul.
I think it's, I agree. I think it is tough to wrangle people sometimes and wrangle them in a way that feels like you're not like yelling at your friends. I think a really maybe a good tool would be, and I haven't really tried this out. My current group, they argue a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I think really it's like, yeah, you have to kind of make them make the decision and go forward.
Do you use like dungeon timers or something to do that?
I've never had to do that.
Yeah.
I've never had to do it where I like, you know,
add a threat or something.
Well, if they're arguing something in a dungeon, they typically haven't. But yeah, I'll put a timer on them if they're in the dungeon and they're arguing and talking and stuff.
Oh, I'm having an idea in real time.
Go for it now because you're going to forget it.
Okay.
That's very true.
If like your players, you're the DM, have been going back and forth on decision for a very long time, you should give them cards with numbers on them. Like, I don't know, 2, 4, 6 or whatever number. And be like, how strongly do you feel about doing
you
this
make it a
decision?
Scrum thing?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And then everyone puts their numbers up, and it's like, okay, this decision has a larger value
for
than this other.
People who don't know, Scrum is a productivity tracking tool for sprints to week work periods on projects. It's a project management tool.
So everyone doesn't have to say yes or no. They can say how strongly they feel.
It's a framework.
Yeah,
it's a framework. Yeah.
I'm a Scrum Master, so
certified.
Certified.
Shade, you had a pretty strong reaction to that. What you said?
I was just gonna say.
Started screaming.
Generally speaking, I plan 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. Everything can happen within 15 minutes in my mind. I will let my players chat, argue, whatever. 15 minutes. I will dedicate a scene to a group of players or an individual player. 15 minutes. And that is, it's a rough, you know, I wouldn't say it's perfect. I don't like to set a timer next to myself. Mm. But I glance at my...
You famously have a good internal clock.
I do have a pretty good internal clock. And I'm like, this is the time.
He doesn't time his COVID tests.
Wow. That's impressive. I guess not really, because if you hit more than that, the result doesn't like change
just,
after the 15 minutes.
It can.
It can.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it can be invalidated after 30 minutes.
Oh. Anywho, you know,
the more you know.
I think anything past 15 minutes is too long. 15 minutes is the absolute maximum.
Mm. Okay.
We are moving between scenes, moving between spotlighting.
I hear you. You've got your time frame, but how do you move your players out of that 15-minute window?
Hi, you know, Rio, we're going to return to you in just a minute and move to the next person if it's a spotlighting issue. If it is a...
You use my name very angrily.
Well, no, I thought you were talking to him. I thought you were yelling at him and telling me to go next.
No, 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 no.
I was like, yeah, I'll go next.
I'm sorry, Rio. I apologize.
Sorry, he's really yelling today.
Franco, we're going to move on to you, on from your thing.
I do have a
point.
We're going
to return to your moment.
Interrupted by
and then we're going.
I interrupted myself.
But we're now at 8 minutes for that. So we're going to move back to Franco's point in just a moment, from Rio's point and from my point, and just, you know. So that's how I would do that for spotlighting, for the, you know, the players are arguing, you know, do we go back out and return this Hina, this lady to the surface, or do we continue into the void, the darkness, the ever stretching darkness? 15 minutes, and then I say, okay. You know, a decision has to be made, or it will just naturally, organically, because
which
people,
it did.
I have never had anyone argue for more than 15 minutes.
There was a thing that happened in that session where, like, so what Rio's talking about, a little bit of context, is that there was a group, there was a pathway to underground that we had found in this farmer's house. Somebody was like, I want to leave, I want to go back with this NPC. And so then there was a divide that happened. We ended up deciding to split the party, and I was one of the main people who wanted to explore this tunnel that we had found. And then as we, like, just had made that decision and like 15 minutes had passed, like in the game's time, my character was like, oh fucking shit, like I have to get back there right now because I had realized something. But at that point I just sort of sprinted away. I was just like, oh shit, and just like started running, and then other people could make their decision after that. So I think that, Rio, that is probably what you meant by like it starting a talk again. Or
like I was just saying, like, using that as a quick example, but like, you know, people will either resolve their conversation within 15 minutes in my experience, or if you need to move them, just say, all right, gang, we've been doing this for too long. You need to make a choice, or I'll introduce a peril. Mm. Like, that's something where I might just introduce a peril of, like, as you're arguing about this, you hear the drums in the deep.
Yeah.
You know, kind of thing.
Like, classic Lord of the Rings.
Mary.
Mary.
Like Mary and Pippin.
Oh.
He knocked the skeleton over, and then all the goblins came.
Oh, you're not a nerd?
Classic
moment.
I could
have sworn you were.
Rio, I'm so sorry. I was like, Mary.
You made the reference that I okay.
Can I get back to whatever I was talking about?
Yeah, that's not Franco talk.
What were you saying?
I forgot, man. Okay, hold on. Let me try to get back on track. So we were talking about people arguing is one thing. Let me talk about how
you're talking about your group was like that they argued.
No, I'm going to talk about something different.
Okay, great. Let's talk about this.
So, like, let's say you're a DM, you're role playing as a character, an NPC who's trying to be, and then the players are like trying to convince them of something or talk to them or argue with them and blah blah blah. I think a lot of people might get into a trap of like, you know, just like kind of letting that go on or not knowing exactly what to do. But I think at some point you have to like firmly decide that like this NPC is not going to help you with this, or this NPC is only going to help you if you do this. And then that's it.
Yeah. Using the narrator's voice like that can be really helpful too.
Yeah.
Of like,
it's like, hey,
you guys,
let me break out of this. You guys have been talking about, you can continue arguing. You continue with this line of reasoning. They continue with their line of reasoning. It goes on for like another 30 minutes or dungeon turn or whatever.
Yeah.
And then it's like, it doesn't get resolved.
Yeah.
What do you do now? You have to change strategy or just leave this person or, I don't know, stab them or whatever.
There is a thing in improv where like you have to change tactics after you raise stakes. So like if you're in an argument in a scene.
Just like in real life.
Yeah. And like the argument is not being resolved. People are too stuck in their corners or whatever.
Good advice for real life too.
Yeah, for real. You have to change tactics or else you will just get into a circular fight.
Yeah.
So you can either as a GM, if you feel like this is happening, you could have the NPC change tactics, or you could say like to your players, like you said, using a narrator's voice, need to change how you're thinking about this.
I've been in a multi-venue argument before that spanned like several hours.
Oh, Jesus.
Like it started at a bar. We got on the train. We went to a restaurant. We continued arguing in front of everybody. And then we got on a train and we got back to their place and we continued arguing and that was it. And it's just like, oh, yikes. That was a terrible, terrible day.
Rio.
So as I've recently have been going through my mental health journey, I'm realizing that I'm on the autism spectrum.
Sure.
And I have ADHD, which means a lot of times I get stuck in these little moments and I'm not aware about it. Mm. And I think a lot of our advice and our stuff that we've been talking about is like, how do you deal with neurotypical blocks and people? If you're throwing in someone who literally is processing information differently, like have we... I can't speak for this, but you three have dealt with me for years. Have you developed any practices to sort of like predict my behaviors?
I never tell you what to do. I only give you options.
This is a great question that we can explore right after these breaks.
Hey everyone, it's me, Nick, from the Tabletop Podcast. When I'm not hosting, I'm thinking about ways to create a better podcast for you guys, and I think I landed on something pretty fun. In fact, if you go to our Patreon at patreon.com/tabletopped and join for as little as $1 a month, you can get access to a new episode a month that we're going to start putting out. In fact, we're going to be calling this one Wild Magic, I think, in that we're going to talk about anything and everything that interests us, not just TTRPGs, though there will be a lot of that. It is truly unhinged, and if you are a fan of the podcast and all of the hosts, you're definitely going to want to be on it. We're thinking of dropping these at the end of each month, so join our Patreon today. That is patreon.com/tabletopped. Oh, and there's going to be so much more coming out in the new year there, so don't miss it. Sign up today.
Are you looking for an actual play podcast with young, hot role players, disciplined professional voice actors, and wholesome content? Well, this isn't that podcast. AARPG is an adults-only podcast with interviews, actual play stories where...
Excuse me, Matt, why do you sound like you've been chain-smoking since you were a toddler?
What do you mean?
The voice. You don't have to do that voice, man.
I don't?
Nah, just tell them that we're a group of old friends who like to get together, hang out, play lots of different types of games, and we want them to feel like they're sitting at the table with us. And they can find us just by searching for the AARPG podcast on their favorite podcatcher and at the AARPGs on YouTube.
Welcome back, everyone, to Tabletopped. We're talking about tempo. Rio brought up a really interesting question right before the break. So, everyone, Franco, you were just saying that you'd never give, specific things. You always give options. Is that the main
that's
way
That's just
you...
for Rio specifically. I guess with dealing with, if people need accommodations and stuff, I introduce, regular bio breaks and stuff for my players because they... Oh, I started using music as well. Mm. That also helps some of my players... focus and stuff. Yeah. And then, some people just don't grok the rules very well. So, I'm happy to just be like, yeah, this is what you would do on your combat. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what you can do on your combat. Yeah. This is what you roll. This is what you add, blah, 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 and all this stuff. And it's just like, some people are there for the vibes and for the fun. And just, man, these fucking rules, they gotta get out of the way. Because a lot of, I have found that, playing with my players now, I'm just like, I think a lighter system would work better with you guys because... Yeah. We really enjoy the role playing. Mm-hmm. We do the fighting, but it's about exploration. A lot of them get excited about new character turns that can happen and all this stuff. And a lot of times the more mathy stuff, I guess, doesn't really mesh with them as mm-hmm. well. Or maybe it's just the mechanic. Maybe it's because it's mechanical, or maybe it's because it's mathy. And I don't know. Everybody's neuro spectrum that everybody mm-hmm. in my table is at, but. I have some vague idea about it.
Yeah.
But usually it's attention stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think a lot of our group has attention stuff.
Yeah, totally.
I think me and Shade are the only ones that don't.
Yeah. We're all just I'm cats otherwise. Yeah.
Well, I'm just bipolar, so you guys have to deal with that.
I feel like I don't get distracted. One of the things I can put into this filter now, mm-hmm. which I think was something that I really bothered Shade with earlier. Is,
it could just be a perception thing.
It could just be a perception thing. Cause I'm refiltering past experience. But one of the things for ADHD people is they really one of the sort of I don't want to say standard behaviors, but maybe a
one
typical
of the most common
behavior is arguing gives gives us like that dopamine hit where arguing becomes really good. And then like on the autism side, I get really stuck into what I think is right or wrong, and I can't move away from it. And I know me and Shade had half hour discussion in character because Valen had a very, like, I had decided what Valen's sense of law morality, and order was, and the city guard had there, and I was like, no, you're wrong. And I would have sat there and argued for hours.
It felt like that.
I wasn't annoyed by it. I was just kind of like,
it sounded like you guys were like actually arguing, and then afterwards it was like, no, that was fine. That was all in character and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And it was like, okay, great.
I just wanted to, like, it was Rock versus Hard Place.
Yeah,
like,
right. You know. It was very Batman Joker,
And I realized now that, like,
15-minute rule.
I would need, like, I would never move voluntarily from that position.
Well, here's how I've done it with you. So we've had moments like this in the past. One, I think the most infamous, maybe in your mind, is in Westwood, where I threw you through a bar window. So sometimes I have felt as though you're like, you have, like, you get like stuck in a frame of mind and you're not intaking like a new piece of information or something. And then what I do is I just make that piece of information like incredibly obvious, which was throwing you through a window and then having the guy like essentially break a leg off the table and be like, I'm about to cave in your head.
That's a really good
point. Are you going to listen now? And then you're like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, that may be related to the thing that I said, which was like immediately presenting you with options by being like, okay, like, this is what's happening. And I think this is a good practice for any player because it's like, I just immediately present them with a situation and have them make a decision.
Yeah, because like in that case, there was this guy who like Rio had said something that this character felt disparaging towards, like, a friend who had died. And
I whispered it to a colleague.
Yeah, and this person was a werewolf, so I had very good hearing, and heard about and basically confronted him. And then Rio was like, yeah, I meant what I said. And he basically was like, okay, and grabbed you and threw you through a window. And
that's so, true, like, you had the option to lie.
So, like, I presented you with, like, okay, what's the out? And then you said, like, no, I'm going to stick with it. And then I basically went forward and I didn't, like, try to penalize you, but instead I was like, this character feels super strongly about this now. And then I provided you with the out, which was, you're going to do this task for me. And you said, yeah, okay.
But Rio, I do want to just say, like, I want to sing your praises to your sticking with guns sometimes, because, like,
it's great when the character, when it makes sense in character.
You do, like,
all your characters are like that.
You do make these, like, you know, the other day I was so blown away with, like, because your character has kind of been going on this journey of, like, oh, maybe instead of vengeful I should be reformative and things like that, and has kind of taken on this relationship, we'll say, with Tyr. He's kind of devoted to Tyr for a hot minute, and you said, instead of doing fighting right at the start of this combat, you're like,
reform your ways.
Yeah, exactly. You preached at them real quick.
I was like, surrender, and we'll, like, discuss repercussions.
You know, I also wanted to tell them to surrender, too, because I wasn't sure if they were bad or not, to be honest.
The thing that was so funny about that to me was, like, you were like, surrender, and then essentially, like, looked up at the sky and was like, right? That was right?
That was really
so good.
You do choose these moments. Like, you are the kind of person who is like, okay, sometimes when we explain, like, the consequences, or when the consequences are very clear, you will sometimes say, like, yeah, I get that, but I got to do this because that's the right. You're very good about that. I just want to sing your praises.
I think Valen's a perfect character for you, to be honest. Yeah, like, it's probably your most. I don't want to say your most you character, but it was. It's like, because it's not really. Yeah. It's not
the
really
one
how
that you have
are.
Played the best. I think.
Yeah,
I think Yuma Ro is your most you character personally.
Yeah, it's a sweet, nice robot.
Yeah. But, like, for example, though, I feel as though the thing that can be hard with pacing too, and I think then it requires the GM to make a decision, is like if a player gets fixated on a certain type of action or whatever, and that is not what the GM had in store or had something built at the end of that way of the action, then I think you just have to accommodate it and say, like, I'm just going to take this chunk and then move it over to where this person's heading, because, like, it's not about them doing it right, because there is no right in a TTRPG. Mm-hmm. It's collaborative storytelling. It just changes what the thing is. You know?
I think when people – have we talked about this before? Mm-hmm. But, like, when people talk about, like, characters and being doing things in character and stuff. And it's like, when I play a TTRPG, I usually don't think about it as a fiction. I think about it as real life.
Right.
Because in real life, we often do things that are out of character.
Right. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I would say, you know, because you just pointed out something I think is very important. As a GM, someone who's moderating the game, to keep that tempo going, you do need to be willing to shift your pieces about so that you
or
can...
Or get rid of pieces
entirely.
Or get rid of pieces entirely, yeah.
Add in new pieces, because your players will do things that maybe you weren't thinking about, or, you know, maybe that was like, oh, okay, you know, I hadn't really prepared for this or that, but I do want to pursue this and give them this. Mm. And just, you know, being that adaptable. But I think as a player, like, I know one of my problem things is because, like you, Rio, I also do fixate on things. I think
no,
that...
No.
Yeah. I want to logic it out for everyone, make sure everyone understood what happened and we're all on the same page and happy. I have found as a player, silence is my biggest friend for tempo. Mm-hmm. So I know there are so many times where I've been in so many games and I'm like, I know that's not how that rule works. And I know it would benefit the player, or I know it would benefit the GM in this moment if we were to talk about that. And I have, to your point, talked about that at the end more. Mm-hmm. I'm more inclined to do that now than I was.
No, but I hear, because I've had to practice that exact same behavior, too.
Yeah.
With Nick, and Nick is our newest DM. That's why I'm calling him. But when he's running a game and something will happen, I'm like, oh, that's not how that's supposed to work. And I'm like, he's... Nope, this isn't mine.
Not right now.
Oh, like when you're a player and you listen to a DM make a mistake or whatever.
Or anything. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Or I hear a player.
Interpret a rule one way.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or I hear a player. I actually, you know, I used to kind of relish in when someone would be like, oh, hey, how does this work? And now I'm just kind of like, I don't really want to answer that question if someone asks me it. Like, you can look it up.
Oh, it's like when a DM asks you as a player,
something
how
like
does this work?
That'll happen sometimes. Hmm. Like, I'm happy. I will answer it. But I always feel like, you know, that has ruined the tempo.
Yeah, because right.
What I've noticed sometimes on a rare occurrence, when I'm running a game, someone will, one of the players will ask Shade, how's,
I'm
like,
sorry.
And I'll be like, no, I'm running it. Stop that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I try to just keep my mouth shut now.
So maybe another thing to help tempo at a game is like at a session zero or whatever, kind of set out a fencing about how rules should
stop
be considered.
Stop asking Shade questions.
I mean, shut the fuck up.
That's probably a good rule, actually. Yeah, we should all implement
that.
In the
same way that people ask Shade, how do the rules work, I think people also go, like, we'll ask Steven like for strategy questions.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, I think you too will also get asked, like, what should I do next? And it's like, that's breaking tempo, because we shouldn't have other people talking about what you're
getting. It's really tough whenever we talk about stuff that we do as DMs or as players, and we kind of say these things, but we're sort of relaying an ideal version of ourselves that we're talking about in the current moment.
Yeah, we're super
flat. I think it's
harder when it's flowing.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just
exactly.
Like, you have to make really quick decisions.
Like, fuck, I did this.
Yeah.
And it's worth acknowledging that, like, there is fun in those moments, too. Like, conversations,
sure.
They are their own, you know, it's a game and it's a social game.
It's a conversation.
Yeah.
It's like one of those, it's like there's no absolutes. You don't always need to do something one way or always, you shouldn't always avoid asking Shade a question.
Right.
So you shouldn't always go to Shade with a question. Sometimes just like, we have time, figure it out.
I think probably, you could think about it a different way though, you know, just to not think about it as like a threat to your authority, but as a way to offload your duties as a GM.
Yeah,
right. Yeah,
when,
that's also really
like,
good.
Franco did, I forget what we called you, and that was the most recent ICO, but you like did the initiative
tracking
and things like that.
Yeah,
that was
caller.
Great.
Yeah.
The caller, yeah, thank you. I forgot the word. That was fantastic, and I really appreciated that. You know, having those kinds of tools and agreements are great. I think that, you know, but my original point here is choosing silence and really choosing when you're going to say things.
Totally.
As a player? Or,
as a player or and as a GM.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that as you were talking about that,
too. Yeah, if, like, a GM, like, if a player does something and, like, it maybe not as optimal or, like, you're, like, something, like, this isn't quite right, but you're just like, I'm just going to let it go.
I get stuck a lot of times. It's like, that's not the lore that I told you.
Oh, right.
And I was like, well, that's how they remember it, so I don't really need to correct it right now.
I think with that type of thing, it might
be a problem.
With that type of thing, I do like to correct people when it's like a lore thing or when it's like a fact thing. Like, it's like, we talked to this person. It's like, no, you talked to this other person, actually.
Well, this is actually something I want to kind of bring us to a close on. And it's a kind of a big question, so we can talk about it for a little while.
We should have our clothes on?
Yeah, we should always have our clothes on. But how do
always?
You...
Always? These guys are never nude!
But how do you do, like, how do you track tempo and pace when you're thinking about an overarching story? So I know that some GMs do not build out like a full story. Some do. Like, I usually have like an ending in mind, but I don't have like a middle in mind, things like that. But there's also like a lot of things where if you pace it correctly, it's just way more rewarding for the players when they get something where like finally something clicks or whatever. How do you pace your overarching sort of story? Not so much in the planning phase, but like, how do you make sure that you are moving through a story at a pace that the players are happy and that they're engaged and interested?
Oh,
you know what I mean?
I just did this. I have relevant information. So in our current campaign, The Espers, I'm trying to dial back because basically it was originally set to be three adventures to make the campaign. And the first adventure was very confusing. Mm. Not to me, I wrote it, but in communicating like what was actually happening to the players.
Right.
And with so many players, it was hard to tell like who was getting what information and going. We were rehashing like the same sort of like stuff over and over again.
Yeah.
So we just did our interlude between the two adventures, and I made a roadmap for the second adventure. Mm. And I was like, what are the things that they need to find? And they're like, those are five episodes. Mm. What are the opposing like forces? Mm. You might say you're a big, bad, evil monster. And I was like, okay, so there's going to be an episode for a villain, however many villains are also going to like appear. And I was like, okay, so I know that I have 8 sessions of direct interacting. So it's going to take at least 8 sessions to do all of the things.
Right.
Now, the trick to the next session, because I think you can only really plan for your next session,
right,
is how am I going to move them from where they are to be in the best place to start the next episode at the end of this.
Yeah.
And that can be really tricky because what I have is like, okay, so what possible encounters are they going to have to like solve with combat?
Mm-hmm.
What are they going to explore? What areas are there? And who are the people that it's most important for them to talk to? What are their opinions? What information do they have? And I write all of that down and I'm like, because then you also have to like, what are the players' own goals?
Right.
How are they going to want to interact with their own things?
Yeah.
So I really think that you can't plan your tempo in advance.
Mm.
Like, I think the way you phrased the question is, you really have to like move all. You just have to have all of your pieces ready and start moving things in front and weaving it as you go.
In a way, though, you've sort of planned out like the overall story arc in like key moments, essentially. You've taken key moments and said, like, I'm not planning how, like, I'm not going to put rails down and say, like, they go from here to here to here to here. But you're saying, like, this is a moment that they're going to have to get to eventually. The stuff in between, I don't really know yet, but, like, we'll pace that out. Yeah. And then we get to the next one. The next one, like you said, you have 8 sessions of, like, key moments.
Right.
And then in between, like, that pacing will be kind of up to the players and you to kind of, like, collectively tell that story, right?
Right.
Yeah, so I think that's, like, a really great way. Like I said before, I usually have an ending in mind, so I'm sort of like, okay, so eventually it's going to lead to, like, this is the event, and I think that I have that in mind because of the apocalypse clock in Monster of the Week, mm-hmm. how it basically sets up a session. It will also say, like, you can also use this to do an arc or, like, a full story as saying, like, this is what's going to be happening if the players don't intercede, right?
Yeah, that's my favorite type of...
Yeah.
That's my favorite type of, like, forward planning. Mm-hmm. As just like knowing what the bad guy's plans are,
yeah.
Because I don't like, you know, just saying like, oh, this is definitely going to happen and that type of thing anymore, I guess. But the bad guy's plans were always like the Deathless One was always going to invade Ardgoth.
Yeah, right.
So like in a way, I guess I did kind of do the thing that I do now. I did have an ending, but it was still sort of framed around the fact that like the bad guy's going to do what the bad guy wants to do.
Can I go back? I think I can illustrate my point more concretely.
Absolutely, sure. Yeah.
And I feel like that might be better for dear listener.
We love you, dear listener.
Dear listener.
So I think we already revealed that in the Espers, this second song, you're looking for fragments of the World Heart.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So say that you know that, and again, I'm making all of this up. It's not going to be in the game. It's not, no spoilers. You know, okay, one of the fragments is in the nest of the apocalypse duck.
Sure.
All right. So
writing that down. Like,
I know the apocalypse duck is an encounter because it's guarding the fragment piece.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
All right. So then I went back and I was like, all right. The baker has seen a giant duck. So the baker is going to have the information on where they should go look. For
talk
this
to the bakery.
Yeah, wild to self-check outside every bakery
thing. And now, then the next thing you need to do is when you start in the game, it's like, all right, how do I get the players interested into going to the bakery?
Yeah. And that
and
also...
And that's how you sort of, you do your pacing. I do my pacing.
Every loaf.
from the back. Like, what is the end of the objective? What is the episode objective?
Totally.
And then what is going to... What's the clue ahead of that until I get back to the players?
And I think also to your point there, it also that's where like a narrative voice or like pointing the camera can be really helpful because when you enter a town, you could be like, you see like a gardening shop, you see like an Ace Hardware, and oh that you see a baker standing outside of his bakery, he looks concerned. Like they're the characters are like, oh, okay,
says the flapping has started.
He's screaming about ducks.
I'm gonna ruin this name because I'm really hard at vowels, but so Abrea Iyengar, I think was the first DM that I saw actually narrate in a live play. Mm-hmm. Our camera zooms out, and she does the narrative scenes where it's like you, the audience, the people playing the game, can see this information because it's going to be important.
Yeah,
but then we zoom in and like the players can't act on any of that, but the players. Yeah. Kind of know where to guide their characters through.
I used to do that with Liquid.
You did that with Liquid. Yeah,
yeah. I would start with like a basically a prologue where
a
you
man
would
in
see
a trench coat.
Yeah, it was very Murder She Wrote, where it was like you see the murder and then you're now watching them get to that point.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's also very helpful. I think that Rio, that's a good way to set a pace too. But Shade, you've been trying.
Well, no, I was just because Rio, you said something that I absolutely love for tempo.
Apocalypse Duck.
Yes, apocalypse
every
duck.
Every session, fucking apocalypse.
My pet name for
every loaf.
My pet name for Jackie.
Quacklin.
Yeah, Quacklin. That's right.
Quacklin.
You have this many episodes or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think for a GM, setting a tempo based around you have this many. Sessions is one of the best things that you can do. Knowing your ending,
so agree,
and knowing how many sessions you want to accomplish this in, that is tight.
The best advice for tempo is know your ending before you start that session zero.
This is really funny, guys.
That point, I don't necessarily do that either. I mean, I told you all when we went to the current game with Waterdeep, I said, this is going to be
a zero prep
game. Mm. I am not going to prepare for this game. Yeah. We're going to play what happens and go from there.
And I followed your guidance on that. I don't prep for those games either.
Great.
But one thing that
my Salem game, I think, runs like your Waterdeep game.
Yeah.
Just on a... Yeah. You know, not a city scale.
And that is a type of... That's an entirely different story. That's like serialized, which is like comic books or whatever, which is totally its own pace as well.
Yeah.
But like, I think that if you're trying to tell like a singular story, mm-hmm. or you have like a campaign that's like kind of more focused, that I do think that, like Shade said, like with Lakewood, I was very clear with myself that I wanted this to last around a year.
Yeah.
And so when I was starting to build the next arc or the next section, I was like, okay, so I have to move them into the end game at this point because we're getting close to a year, and like they've mm-hmm. really gotten to a point where I can't heighten anymore. Yeah. It's time to deal with the thing.
Yeah.
So I think that that also really yeah. is a true way of like.
I think
you
that's
could
a cool way of doing
it.
That. Yeah. Yeah. Because that's sort of like on the fly pacing yeah. where you're kind of like, because like my current game now, I do want it to have an end, but I don't have anything in mind for what that ending looks like.
Right. Yeah.
I know that there's like really big threats that exist that they don't really know about.
Yeah.
And that they kind of know about, but a lot of it has kind of gone into a domain management level game, yeah. to be honest.
Like felt RTS. Anxiety in yeah. my heart when you said, I don't have anything planned for the ending right then.
There's no ending to it.
I felt my heart actually, literally vibrate differently.
From the beginning, I had no ending for it. I just built the hex map because I was like, that's a cool idea. I'm yeah. going to yeah. put that monster there. Right. I'm going to put this monster here. I'm going to put that dungeon there. I'm going to put this here, like this item here.
Yeah.
Every level of, this is a secret, so Michael, stop listening. Every level of the mega
we
dungeon.
Love you, Michael.
You too, Steven, maybe?
Huh? And Steven. Maybe? Steven also, don't listen. Every
I
level.
I don't think Steven listens.
I don't think he listens either. I told him that the other thing, he killed my monster in one hit, and he's never going to hear that. Every level of the mega dungeon has an item for one of them mm-hmm. that I've like created or assigned to right. them. It's like, oh, the ranger is this type of, you know, person or whatever, and so I put a magic item in there that would right. be beneficial to them.
Yeah.
It's like every level of the mega dungeon has that. Mm. That's kind of all I planned. I have some monsters. I have like some really big monsters, and I haven't planned like what the dungeon looks like around them at all. Mm. So I have no idea what a lot of the things are, but they haven't touched those yet.
Again, this is so weird because my best planning like format I got from Franco.
What was it?
The five-room dungeon, the entrance, yeah. Oh, the yeah, puzzle, yeah. The yeah, encounter, no,
he
the
doesn't
resolve.
Use that anymore, yeah.
I used that in Argot when I was doing the, because it was, so Argot was when Nick entered it, mm. and I think my favorite part of the campaign and ultimately what I think, because like the first part of the campaign was my first campaign ever,
sure. yeah.
and then I had some ideas of what D&D was like, and I think they were fun, but I feel like I was like, oh, I think I've learned a lot since then.
Yeah.
And then so the 13 Islands was like basically just a hex crawl. Mm. It was a big hex crawl with a bunch of different dungeons. And I was like, how do I write a dungeon? What is that like? What does that look like? And so I just looked up the 5-room dungeon. And mm-hmm. so each of the 13 Islands was a 5-room dungeon.
Right.
And then since then, I have found more success in running dungeons like dungeons.
Yeah. I mean, like, go yeah. check out our wonderful Granny Snake Eyes module that Franco put together. That's kind of a 5-room dungeon, but it also runs like very differently. Like you can run that longer if you wanted to.
And no, I think it's basically a dungeon, but I think like the zones are maybe kind of akin to what like the 5-room dungeon. Basically, the 5-room dungeon is
available on our website, tabletoppodcast.com.
But the 5-room dungeon is a beat chart, basically.
Mm, yeah.
It's just like, here's a beat, here's a beat, here's a beat.
Yeah.
Which is more narrative.
And also very good for tempo.
Yeah, very good for tempo. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. I think it is useful for tempo. I think all of those 5-room dungeons that I ran for you guys, I think they worked fine,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, we basically did an island a session or two sessions.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it
basically.
Was like, yeah, it was beginning, middle, end. It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, the way that I structured my most successful campaigns is like each story I thought of like as an episode mm-hmm. and that would be one or two episodes, like two sessions.
Yeah.
And then I would have three episodes, so each maybe being one to two sessions per arc. So I would have a total of six sessions per arc to get through a section of the story.
Yeah, my best like writing campaigns and adventures has been from like learning about TV season writing.
Yeah, it is okay. a really good way. It's like yeah. they structure it so that there's a rising and then a falling throughout yeah. a season. So
there's always something to bring you back yeah, at the end.
Because in TV writing, there's the episode arc, there's the like inter-season arc, there's the season arc, and then there's the series arc, which is all, they're all different timers. And so just like, it is a good practice of having multiple timers running in your head of like, what is the clock that's happening in this session? What is the clock happening in this like event? What is the clock happening in my overall story? If you want to run it that way.
Fuck, we didn't even talk about Blade in the Dark, their progress clock system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's also a great way to track tempo and to track is pretty much everything else.
Yeah.
We're like, okay, we're doing six turns. You can make your argument, counter argue, yeah. And now we're making it like.
Yeah. Well, I hope everyone felt like they got a little bit of an intro into tempo and how to pace a story in a TTRPG session. If you are interested in hearing more from us, we do episodes like this every Monday. That's right. Every Monday you can get free TTRPG advice. But if you'd like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/tabletop. We do extra episodes there along with other modules and things like that we drop once in a while, as well as our website, tabletoppod.com. You can go there and send us a question that you might want answered on the podcast. We will answer. Everyone, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.